Blog Talk Radio.
Mayor Young in Detroit, this is for you, okay? Join me, if you will, on the pod. You've been such a marvelous audience. I wonder if I could impose on you just one more time. I'd like to hear everybody snap your finger, clap your hands, or something right here. You know.
Okay.
Bones Connection on Saturday night. This is Antoinette. I hope y'all can hear me. Well, first, we do have Ms. Kim with us. I want to make an announcement first. I just got word from someone that a tornado has touched down in Detroit. So, well, so far we know Ms. Kim is all right, but, you know, for y'all that know people in Detroit, you may want to check in on, you know, your family and friends if you're able to. I was also told it was a lot of power outages in Detroit as well. So I want to make that announcement. And Ms. Kim, if you're ready, I'm going to bring you in. Ms. Kim?
Okay, we were muted. That's why we couldn't hear anything. I was going crazy because are you there, Dave?
Yes, I am. And
okay,
we also have David Stone with us. Yes, whose great-great-great-grandmother is Lucy Thurman. So we're looking forward to an exciting show. But if y'all are having problems in Detroit and you find that you're having problems in the areas that y'all are in, please just hang up and we can always reschedule this. I'd rather for y'all to be safe. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. Ms. Kim, you there?
I'm here.
Okay, great. Great. Okay, well, welcome back to the show. Y'all were with me last night, and I'm truly thankful for that. But tonight, we're going to be talking about, Ms. Kim, how was your day in Detroit? Where you were given the keys to the city back in 78? Was it 78 or 77? Ms. Kim?
Yeah, take it off of mute.
Ms. Kim, you have yourself on mute. I hope she's not having problems. Well, David, we're also going to be talking about your great-great-grandmother.
We're going to be able to get in at all. Pardon? You're not hearing me?
She's back.
Okay,
pardon?
Great. I was asking, when were you when were you given the keys to the city of Detroit? What year was that? Was it 77 or 78? Pardon me?
It was 76. It was 76.
Oh, man.
We got a bad connection because I've been talking and y'all ain't heard nothing I said.
Yeah,
no,
I
man,
hear you now.
Yeah, we can hear you now. Now you're loud and clear. Which is good. We got you now, Miss Kim. Well, Miss Kim, while we got you. Oh, boy, excuse my voice, y'all. Miss Kim, while we got you, tell us how was your day in Detroit? How was your day, the tribute to you? How was it?
Yes, ma'am. I'm not hearing you well. I'm not hearing you well. And what I would like to do is I would like for us to reschedule this, okay? But the mere fact that we were able to get through at all, I mean, it's really been a problem. All day long, I could see that. But I want to give thanks to the Lord because he's good and his mercy and
yes,
good
he
forever.
Is.
And one of the things that I learned from the celebration was that we got to learn about offenses because offenses are coming every day. Things are all, it's the devil's job to try and stop us unless where the offenses come. But we got to learn to let it roll off us like the water rolls off the duck back that we're talking about. And just make sure that the offenses don't come from us.
Yes,
so if nothing
right.
else to say that, I would like to reschedule because I want the people to be able to hear about Lieutenant Colonel Jefferson. I'd like for them to hear about Dota Larry Brown, who was given the Congressional Medal in 2007. You know what I'm saying? I'm not hearing you all well, so I don't know what's going on. You want to try to go on for a little while and let's see what happens? Okay. If not, let's
reschedule.
Well,
we can hear you now, Ms. Kim. We can hear you.
But
can
I'm
you
not
hear
hearing
me?
You well. I'm not hearing you
okay.
well.
Okay.
But that's why
can
I say,
hear-
let's go on. Let's go see what happens for a minute, all right?
Okay. All right. Well, David, do you want to tell us about your great-great-grandma, Lucy Thurman?
Yes.
Great.
I'm just going to read from a Google account of her.
Okay.
Her name was Lucinda Smith, and she was born in October 22nd of 1849 in Oshawa, Ontario, Canada, to Namath Henry Smith and Catherine Campbell. In 1866, she left her home at 17 when she met Frederick Douglass and Dr. William Wells Brown in Rochester, New York. With the help, she began teaching at a school in Maryland. She moved to Jackson, Michigan in 1869 and married Henry William Simpson. She remarried after Simpson's death to Frank Thurman in 1883. In 1873, she began advocating for the development temperance work for black people at the Women's Temperance Crusade in Toledo, Ohio. When the Women's Christian Temperance Union was formed a year later, she became its only black founding member. In 1883, she successfully convinced the Women's Christian Temperance Union to establish the National Department of Colored Work. In 1893, Thurman became the National Superintendent of Colored Work at that organization. In 1898, she co-founded the Michigan Association of Colored Women's Clubs with a friend, Elizabeth McCoy, and served as the first president. The new organization was under the umbrella of the National Association of Colored Women's Clubs and was dedicated to the welfare rights and education of black women and families. In 1906, she was elected as the third national president. Under her leadership, she helped to establish a temperance department, pass resolutions and activity, worked on in support of anti-lynching campaigns, juvenile courts, and National Association for the Protection of Colored Women and Girls. Now, a portrait of Lucy Thurman painted by Detroit artist Hotel Thea Bowens was included in the 1988 exhibit at the Museum of African History in Detroit. The exhibit featured a dozen prominent women from the state of Michigan, including the Honorable Cora Brown. Now, there was also a pamphlet that was written regarding these women, these 10 women. Now, there was also in Detroit a YWCA that was dedicated to her. She was one of the founding members of the YWCA. She also fought in the 20s with Susan B. Anthony for women's suffrage, the right for women to vote. Now, she has a long history in terms of organizing, going around the world. She was friends with Queen Victoria. In fact, my mother has a tea set that was given to Lucy Thurman by Queen Victoria.
Oh, wow.
What did you say then?
That there was a tea set that Queen Victoria gave her as a present because she went there to talk to and to meet with Queen Victoria regarding women's rights and the right to vote. Lucy Thurman was a women's right activist and a social reformer who, because of the trajectory of her life, is claimed by both Canada and the United States. She was from Ontario, like I said, and she fought to end slavery. Frederick Douglass was a good friend, and they collaborated. Lucinda Smith Thurman's situated between distinct two eras, the legal end of slavery in British North America and the abolition of slavery in the United States. This is to be noted because the life of Lucy Thurman was shaped by her proximity to the still fluid border between the two countries. According to sources, Lucy Thurman was part of an accomplished family. Her younger brother, Charles Spencer Smith, was born in Canada in 1852 and, like his sister, moved to the United States. Charles Spencer Smith earned a medical degree from Meharry Medical College and later served as the 28th Bishop of the African Methodist. Oh, that's C.L. Smith. Yes, I met him. I knew him years ago. Lucy Thurman was raised and educated in Canada, but moved to take a teaching position in Maryland in 1866. The United States, a young Lucy Thurman, came to the circle of esteemed leaders like Frederick Douglass and William Wells Brown. Thurman ultimately made her home in Michigan, and while her professional service would take her throughout the Midwest, South, and West, her home was based in Jackson, Michigan. Lucy Thurman married twice in her lifetime. Thurman's first marriage is not well documented, and despite noting her 1849 birth, various sources contend that Thurman married her first husband, Henry Simpson, in 1847. In contrast, there is great clarity around Lucy Thurman's 1883 marriage to Frank Thurman. A devoted member of the AME Church, Lucy Thurman was committed to a life of service that was religious, moral, social, political, and feminist in nature. Her activism profile is primarily constructed around her leadership in the Women's Christian Temperance Union and the National Association for Colored Women, established in 1873 and 1896, respectively. By some accounts, Lucy Thurman was the African Americans founding member of the Association of Negro Women. And there are more accounts that she was the first African American woman to establish that union. Thurman was also a founding member of the NACW and served as its third president from 1906 to 1908, following Josephine Sloan's Yates and preceding Elizabeth Carter Brooks. Lucy Thurman spent more than 35 years of her life devoted to the work of temperance within the organization's structure of both the Negro Association of Negro Clubs. Lucy Thurman died in Jackson, Michigan on March 29, 1918, and was laid to rest in the city's Mount Evergreen Cemetery. The Nashville Globe noted that Thurman's death left a vacancy in the temperance work ranks and will be very hard to fill. In 1933, the Lucy Thurman YWCA was named in her honor, and in 1992, in recognition of her service to her adopted state, Lucy Thurman was inducted into the Michigan Women's Hall of Fame, and I was at that ceremony. And that's just about all that I have to give right at this point.
Okay.
But, you know, she was on the international stage as a feminist and as a political leader for women's causes around the world. And if you want to Google her and get more information, you can Google her.
Okay,
Lucy
well, thank
Thurman,
you.
Or Lucinda Thurman.
Yeah, I was able to find her under Lucy Thurman.
You can also get her under Lucinda Thurman.
Okay.
But if you go to Lucy Thurman, you'll see in other sites where her first name is Lucinda. That's what my grandmother was named after her, Lucinda, but everybody called her Lucy as well.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Now, I know you're working on an organization, but first let me give this message to Ms. Kim. Ms. Kim, I sent you a copy of the message that I received that was for you from Paul. And he sent a picture as well. So I sent that to you. If you're able to get it now, I hope so. But in case you're not, you didn't get it out, just wanted to let you know. But, David, you're working on an organization, and I think it's a fantastic organization. Do you care to tell us about it? And Ms. Kim dropped. David? I think he dropped as well. Okay, well, if anybody has any questions or comments, if you press the number one, I can let you in. I know they're having problems with, you know, as I said, I was given a message about tornadoes that were touching down in Michigan. So hopefully that's not the case. But if anybody has a question or a comment, please press the number one because y'all know I don't do this well by myself. Okay, we do have someone. Okay, area code 313.
Yep, that's Colonel Melbourne, and I'm sorry, kind of got here. Yeah, how you doing? I got here kind of late. We had some major storms out here, so
yes,
a lot of flooding.
Yeah,
but I did get the last part, so I told David I'd try to be here, and I am. But
yes, well, we appreciate you.
Yeah.
Yes, so you didn't experience the tornadoes? See, the message that I got the beginning of the show was that tornadoes were touching down in Detroit.
No, I'm in Farmington Hills, and we didn't get tornadoes, but the little stream that I have that runs beside my house is no longer a stream, it's a river. So it's up about 6 feet, but it's not beyond its banks yet, but it's up about 6 feet. So yeah, major stuff. But we're doing good.
Good.
Yeah. Okay, that's about all I have, though.
Would you like to tell us about your service? Now, are you a Tuskegee Airman as well?
I am a Tuskegee Airman, but I am not an original Tuskegee Airman. I've been in the Tuskegee Airman organization for, since the mid-70s. So, I've been around him a long time. I know Colonel Jefferson quite well. We lived a block away from one another. And most of the other Tuskegee Airmen I know also. But I've been around him a long time, so I know almost everybody. So
So you know Major Tillman.
Yes, I do.
His wife is a sweetheart as well. They're a lovely couple.
Yes, they are.
So now, did you fight Iranian war? It was an occupation.
The Iraqi war? Yeah, whatever it was. Yeah. No, I got out in 96, and I missed that, which was probably a good thing.
Yes. Now, can I ask you, what is the difference in a war and an occupation? I mean, because both the soldiers are over there fighting, so what is the difference?
Well, an occupation, it means the war is over and you occupy the country. In order to occupy, to have an occupation, you have to win the war. You can't occupy if you lose the war. The occupation means that you somehow, through war, politics, trickery, or whatever, gained some turf that was not yours and belonged to somebody else. So, for example, we had a war with Germany. We won the war. And then after the war, we occupied Germany. We had a war with Japan. We won that war.
Yeah.
And then we occupied Japan. We still occupy both of them. Well, semi. And now the wars in the Middle East, we have not won. We are there, but we're really not occupying in the sense that we've defeated the people and we've taken over. So you can be in a country and semi-control it. And as we have in Iran and not Iran, but Iraq and Afghanistan, but we never really controlled either one of them. We were there, but they had an insurgent and we are leaving and they're still there. So I guess it's the last man standing that counts. So they're the last man standing. We're out. So, but in any case, I missed those. I retired before 9/11, so I missed all of that. And,
well, that's a good.
Keeps you safe if the people aren't shooting at you.
of course, most definitely.
Yeah. Sure.
Now, can you explain what is going on with Afghanistan, if you can? I see where Biden is, calling for the troops to come home. So what stance does that put us in where he's – I don't understand when you're letting a country know that you're going to pull people out. Doesn't that just give them a chance to plan their, their next attack on the people there?
Well, pardon me, that I think was poorly – poorly planned. We didn't give the I think what you're talking about is getting the people that helped the American troops out of there so that they don't get massacred. And I think we did a not so good job of planning their, what we call in the military, exfiltration. So we've got them over there with fundamentally no way of getting out. And everybody that has been in the military wants them out. I mean, if they came to help us, our job is to take care of them. In the military, we have this thing, leave no one behind. We cannot leave them behind. And so my hope is that the senators and congressmen and all those other folks make it available to them to get out. That's going to be a chore now because we've closed down our major base over there. And getting them to collection points without having the Taliban get there at the same time is going to be difficult. So you got to get them all in one spot to get them out of there, and getting them to that place wherever it is, and the Taliban knowing that they're going to get there, that's going to be a problem. So we planned that one poorly.
Yes, I have to agree with that. Now, today they had announced that they're going to, if they restart the draft, that they're also going to draft women, that women have to register for the draft. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't. But
in Congress, they're going to vote on that.
Well, that's going to be an interesting one. That's where chivalry and equal white rights have a divergence. So, I had, as a commander, I had many women in our organization, and they did well. The Israeli army has many women in their army.
Yeah,
one
so
of the
theirs
things
is amazing.
Is,
you know, no matter where you are in the world, if you are, you know, an Israelite, you have to register the draft. No matter, you know, you have to register in that country. You have to serve the military.
That's right. You not only register, but you must serve. Now, the problem that they run into with that is in fighting with the Arabs, they found that sometimes where it would be prudent for the Arab units to surrender, they would not surrender to a female. This presents a problem because now you're going to take a lot more casualties because, you know, again, chivalry and equal rights are not necessarily convergent. They're divergent sometimes. So there are pluses and minuses. I have found in my career that the women are just as capable as the men. Now, we were not in combat units, ground combat units. We were on the air side. But they could fix an airplane just as well as the men could. They could launch and recover the aircraft. And now they're female fighter pilots, and they fight just as well as the men. So I don't have a problem with capability. Again, sometimes chivalry and equal rights run into each other. So that's a problem that the people above my pay grade are going to have to figure out. I'm glad I don't have that problem.
I think it's the feminist movement is pushing this. I'm not happy about it. You know, I mean, I think about my daughter, and you know, I'm like, no, I don't want you over there fighting. But and also, she's a mother. You know, so I'm like, so what if these women, you know, they register, and later on they become mothers, but if they're drafted, then they have to go in and leave their children and everything else. I'm like, how does this work?
Yep, that's probably what's going to happen. The only thing I can say is, again, I'm glad I'm not in the decision-making process in there because it's pretty much whatever you decide is going to be wrong.
I've seen on the news where there were women, they were happy about it. You know, they're like, oh, great, you know. And also I'm like, okay, these are a bunch of feminists. You know, I'm like, okay, you know, so you went to ROTC. You know, my daughter went to ROTC. I begged her not to, but she did it anyway. But, you know, I'm like, okay, so you have this experience, but you really don't know what it's like to be out there. And why are we putting women out in the forefront where that's something that, you know, this country has never done? I mean,
They've had women in the Army before in combat, but even back during the Civil War and the Revolutionary War. However, I don't know how they got away with it, but sometimes the men didn't know that they were women. I don't know how they worked that out, but, you know, they did. So they were there, and they contributed. And then, of course,
as a nurse, something like that, I can understand. You know, you're a nurse. I mean, but still, I don't understand, mm-hmm. you know, why women would even want to go out there. I mean, Lord, forgive me. I don't even want my sons out there. So, but that's just the mother in me. I don't want my sons hurt, even though they're grown men. But I don't want them hurt. And I know a lot of people are like, that's not right. But, you know, that's just me as a mother.
I was going to say, well, that's what mothers do. They, a kind of a funny story for me. Our unit was during the Gulf War.
Mm-hmm.
Our unit was on alert, and we were sending people over to the Gulf for the Gulf War. And my mother called me up one day and said, you know, Larry, I've been thinking. And I said, yeah? And she said, yeah, you're an only son, so you really don't have to go. And I said, yeah, I understand what you're saying, Mom. That really doesn't apply to me, one. But even more than that, how would it sound as the commander stands in front of all of his men and says, I know you guys are going to do well. You go over there and you do your job and all the rest of that stuff. But my mom won't let me go, but you guys go ahead and do a good job. Yeah, that's going to go over.
Yeah, you sound like an obedient son. You sound like an obedient son. You're being obedient to your mother. Yes, that worked. That worked for me.
Yeah, but it didn't work.
especially you're her own son. My goodness. I mean, because the men are supposed to carry on the name. I mean, I was just concerned when I heard this morning, and it also made me think of what's coming. You know, are they planning an attack somewhere? Or are they saying that they feel as though we're getting ready to be attacked? That now you need the women too. You know, what could be going through? We're not knowing, and I know you're not able to tell us, but you know, it's just something that's brewing behind the scenes.
Well, I think what's happening, I'm just wondering if I just lost power again.
y'all are having a bad in Michigan.
Yeah, but what I think is happening is two things. One, the military is looking to be all-inclusive, and they've been kind of pushed in that direction. And yeah, its lights are going berserk here. And so the military is sitting there saying, okay, if equal rights and equality is what everybody's pushing for, then we have to do it. And there is really no legitimate reason that would stop females from going into military. Number one, they're already in, and they're doing almost every job. So the question is, why would we say no, especially when a lot of them are saying, why not? So, you know, again, they're between a rock and a hard place. My thought is that we have the best military in the world. What we don't have, you know, I'm trying to couch my words here. What we don't have is the numbers, is the numbers that the Chinese have and the Russians have. So, you know, we, man for man, you know, we're going to be as good or better. But the Chinese, China has, what, 1 billion people? We have...
Yeah, they have people than we do.
300 million. So 300 million is a big number, but 1 billion is three times that. So can we compete man for man? No. We have what they call force multipliers, which means that technology can count for several people. But the Chinese are not a slouch in technology either.
No,
so
they're not.
We need to be able to compete with them. We have, as I said, I think, the best trained and the best equipped army in the world. Navy and Air Force and Marines and Special Forces and all the rest of that stuff. We're second to none. But in a war of attrition, the question is, can we compete? And
go ahead, forgive me.
Oh, so I guess that's the that is one factor I'm sure that they're looking at. And there may be others. And in fact, there are others. But that's one that stands out and stands out like, you know, a sore thumb. You know it's there. It's the 300-pound canary in the room. So, yeah, that's it.
Well, now, if we keep selling China our farmland, you know, which China has a lot of things that are here, you know, I mean, they brought up the water rights. They have a lot of the water rights. They're buying up the farmland. So we don't know how many Chinese sleeper cells or, you know, whatever you want to call them, that they already have here.
Well, they're all
in
over.
My opinion.
Yeah, well, and, you know, that is a problem. It's not the sleeper cells. It's the cyber stuff that they're doing. And the United States went to sleep for a while, and we allowed China to get into Africa. They're doing everything in Africa, building roads, building cities, building all the rest of this stuff, and we're sitting back watching it happen. Now, you know, we've kind of abdicated our position in the world, and hopefully this administration will reverse some of that. But it didn't start with the last administration, and you know, it's been going on for a while. Both Democrats and Republicans are both guilty, but we've got to make sure that we figure out what we want to be when we grow up. Right now, there are things that are happening that we ought to be paying more attention to, in my opinion.
Yes, I agree. I mean, we have a lot going on, and it's just a lot. I just don't know where to begin with it all. It's just that we have so much that's going on. Where do we begin and where do we stop? You know, I mean, we don't have that focal point. And so to me, adding women in the military is not going to do it. You know, to make them have to sign for a draft is not going to fix the problem.
Yeah, and I don't know. I'm not familiar with the women draft thing yet, but we pride ourselves right now as having the best volunteer army in the world, because everybody in the military now is a volunteer. So what they're projecting, I don't know, but I'll tell you this. They've got a lot of very smart people burning the midnight oil, trying to figure out what we ought to be doing next. And I believe that they have that capability. They can do that. Wasn't so sure of last administration, but I know this one. They've got competent people in, and I'm convinced they're going to do the right thing. We've got a bunch of people may not have been paying much attention, but very powerful people in the military in Washington have been taking over. Our new Secretary of Defense, General Brown, is the Chief of Staff of the Air Force, and right after January 6th, they had General Honoré in there. Those are three extremely powerful black men running the show, and they are not only powerful, they are the cream of the crop. They are sharp. So, like I say, I have full confidence that they have the capability of doing the right thing, and I'm sure they will. I just don't have any doubt in my mind. In fact, some of the moves that were made shortly after they took office are convincing for me. They've all been to all of the war colleges and things of that nature. General Milley, in fact, who's obviously not black, but is an extremely sharp individual and deserves to be where he's at. And I have no doubt that he will do a good job. He put a couple senators in their place. I like that when he did it. They deserve exactly what they got.
Yes,
a left-handed slap. So, you know, we've got competent people in there. And as a commander, my job was not to go out and be great. My job was to clear obstacles out of the way so that my people could go out and be great. And that's what these guys are doing. They are getting the obstacles out of the way so that their people can do the job that they're supposed to do. So I'm happy about that.
Yes. Yes, that's a good thing. This I want to ask you. Now, we've been told, we have read, we've heard that they're going to use the military for these to go door-to-door for the vaccines. Have you heard anything about this?
No, I haven't. But they're actually not going to use the military. What they may do is use the National Guard. The states own the National Guard. And so the Guard will probably be the ones that do that, and that they will be at the governor's call. And some of the red states, they won't do it, okay, which I don't know why, but it is what it is. And some of the blue states probably will. So we have to kind of wait and see how that shakes out. But the U.S. Army will not be doing that.
Okay, now from what I understand regarding the military and everything, that when y'all take an oath, you swear to the Constitution, and that is not to do the people any harm, that you won't go against the people. So if the people are refusing the vaccine, then you're going against the people's rights to enforce them to take the vaccine? And not you personally, but from the military, National Guards and And then the National Guard is still a part of the military, right? Or no? Commander, did we lose you? Okay, y'all, we lost the commander. I don't know what happened. If y'all can hear me, could somebody press 1 or something so I know? Because I don't know if I'm able to be heard or not. Maybe y'all lost me. Okay, I see. You want in? Let me see. Okay, a lot of people press 1. Okay, 708, I think I know who this is. Okay, everybody press 1. Okay, and we got the commander back. 708, are you coming in, or did you just want me to know? Okay, I can't hear you. I don't know if y'all can hear me or not.
Oh, hello, okay, hello, 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 hello,
hello, hello. Hello, Brother Eddie.
Okay, can you hear me now? Yeah, but I'm here talking. Yeah, I can hear you. We lost Tim, and that, but anyway, yeah, you can be heard.
Yeah, he's back. He's back. He's back. So you want to stay on with me?
Okay.
Okay.
I'm here in the background. I'm just putting myself on mute, but I'm here.
Okay, well, jump in when you're ready. Okay,
all right.
Command. Hello, we lost.
Yeah, it dropped. I don't know why. It's probably the weather.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
yes.
In any case, we support the Constitution and that kind of stuff. One of the things that the Army has done, you know, they're trying to get back into the. I should say the military, not necessarily the Army, the military, is they're trying to get back into the realistic stuff. For example, there's been a lot of talk about changing the name of some of the Army bases, and I think that is absolutely correct. The last administration wouldn't allow that to occur. But, you know, Robert E. Lee in the South, I don't know what other term to use other than they were traitors. And to name bases after some of the Confederate generals, who lost the war. Who did not support and defend the Constitution of the United States, and to name bases after them as if they were heroes is 1,000% wrong. So the Army or the military is trying to correct that. I personally was, I'm going to say this, even though I didn't really get a chance to do what I was going to do. There was a sailor during the Second World War. Everybody's seen his picture during Pearl Harbor when he was shooting down Japanese airplanes. His name was Dory Miller. He by himself moved his commander, who was mortally wounded, to a safe part of the ship. Manned a machine gun, which he was not trained to do because all blacks in the Navy were only either what they call messmen or cooks or people that served the food. That was their total job. So he moves his commander, physically picks him up, moves him to a place of safety. He later died, but he did that twice. And manned this machine gun. By all accounts, he shot down from 4 to 7 airplanes. They're not sure what the number was precisely. And then helped evacuate people off the ship after he ran out of ammunition. For that, he got a letter of congratulations. You did a good job. And the black press got a hold of that and said, whoa, wait a minute. And so they upgraded that to the Navy Cross, which is the third highest medal you can get. It should have been the Medal of Honor. And there was another Tuskegee Airman and myself, and I never went to Washington on it, but he did, to try to get that medal upgraded to the Medal of Honor. It didn't happen. And but the Navy has, oh, by the way, his name was Dory Miller. And Dory Miller was a hero. And he was transferred. The ship he was on was a battleship in Pearl Harbor, got sunk. So they transferred into another ship, and then that ship got torpedoed, and he died. So, again, should have gotten the Medal of Honor. But the Navy did not do that, would not do that. And I was ready to go to war. The other guy that was working on it died, and I said, okay, I'll pick it up and go from there. But they came out this year. The Dory Miller is now going to be an aircraft carrier. Aircraft carriers are named after presidents. Dory Miller was an enlisted man. First enlisted man that got an aircraft carrier named after him. The first black enlisted man with an aircraft carrier named after him.
So he got a high honor, but it was late. You know, he got an air he died.
Right, but it's here. It's a brand new one. They're building it now, and he will be a unique person in the sense that he will be one of the most modern aircraft carriers that the United States has. The United States has the most modern carriers in the world anyway. But he is going to be the one and only black enlisted man, not a president, with an aircraft carrier named after him. And when that thing is built, if I'm still around, I plan to be there.
Yes, I see. I'm looking it up, and I see where it's a nuclear-powered aircraft.
Right.
Aircraft carrier.
Right. So he's in terms, I'm on the radio, I guess, in terms that we can most understand, he's a real bad dude.
Yeah.
So he's one that we can all be proud of. And, and should be.
Yeah.
So the military is trying to get their arms around all these years of neglect for black men and blacks in particular. And there's a lot of stories I could tell you about, but I'll just drop it at that. Dory Miller is going to be the crowning thing, in my opinion. I still think he should have got the Medal of Honor, but an aircraft carrier is second best. That's pretty doggone good.
Yes, that's very good. You know, especially since before that, I see where it was the Gerald F. Ford. So it's good to see a black man has reached his honor. Pardon me?
Mm-hmm. I said, which
it's good to
Gerald
see.
Ford was a president. Kennedy was a president.
Yes.
All the aircraft carriers now are named after the presidents, and all the nuclear submarines are named after states. So, and it's interesting, and the destroyers and now the light cruisers, which would be kind of a what they call littoral ships, the USS Detroit is a littoral ship, which is a combat ship. And there's a USS Michigan, which is a nuclear submarine. So we have the Detroit and Michigan both in the Navy mix there. So we're doing pretty good. We're moving things in the right direction. We have you know, we have the first black chairman in the Joint Chiefs of Staff in Colin Powell, and now we have a black Secretary of Defense and a black, which these are all firsts, and a black Chief of Staff of the Air Force, and we just keep, we're starting to reach back and pull people up, competent people. And so the Tuskegee Airmen and the 361st Tank Battalion and the Triple Nickel and some of the other guys have all contributed to getting us to where we are. Progress is slow, but, you know, we'll turn slow, but it does turn. And we're finally getting into positions where we can affect things for the better. And I'm going to quit talking because you got other people in the queue that want to talk too.
Well, we have Brother Eddie. Brother Eddie is my co-host. Brother Eddie, do you have anything that you'd like to ask? I know he said he was sitting back and listening.
Yeah,
so Brother
he
Eddie
said he was
taking notes.
Mm-hmm.
Just
there
taking
you
notes and joining the show. Yeah, so y'all can continue. I'm taking notes.
Okay. Well, I hope I'm not saying anything wrong.
Oh, no. No, I'm converting everything into numbers dealing with the word, so I'm enjoying it. You can continue.
Yeah.
And Brother Eddie is the numbers man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Brother Eddie turns everything into numbers, the words into numbers. Go ahead, Brother Eddie.
Well, I hope that he gives me the right six-digit number so I can win the lotto.
Look, if he does, and he's never gave it to me.
No way. Let me just reiterate, like I do to all the people who ask about that. That's not what the spiritual essence of truth has given me, this information dealing with numbers and words. It's all about spiritual. We get wrapped up into their garbage dealing with lotto and chasing money. And no, I'm chasing spiritual and I'm chasing the universe, baby. Ain't got nothing to do with that, because if I did, I would stop receiving what I've been getting.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is true. Okay, well, we do have some callers with their hands up. Let's do this one. Area code 202. Okay, why can't I get you in here? Okay. Okay, area code 202.
Yes.
Hello, do you have a question or a comment?
This is area code 202.
Hello. Think I know who this is. Hello.
Hello,
can you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Hello, how are you?
Apparently, I'm not on. This is William Fauntroy in 202.
I thought this was who you were. Hello, I'm Brother Billy.
Hello.
How are you? Hello, this is
Antoinette.
Good. You good?
Apparently, I'm not getting through. I don't understand.
No, we can hear you. We can hear you, Brother Billy. We can hear you.
Okay.
Commander Brother Billy is one of the original Tuskegee Airmen.
That's right, and I was in Class 45I, where a gentleman from Detroit was the captain of our class, William T. Patrick Jr., and another member from Detroit was D.C. Thomas.
Well, I've been in the Tuskegee Airmen for quite some time. I don't recognize those two guys, but that's not unusual because, as I said, I'm not an original Tuskegee Airman, so
These were
guys
two,
can get by me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these were two guys out of Detroit. And
super.
I remember them well because William T. Patrick Jr., and I'm William T. Fauntroy Jr., and we used to kid each other.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So, Brother Ray, Brother Billy, he didn't fight. They ended the war when he got done.
Okay.
After he finished his training, they ended the war.
Okay. Did you know Thomas, Don Thomas?
In D.C., yeah. He was a classmate.
Okay, Don Thomas. Yeah, he was also, he lived in Detroit here too, but he did
right,
move around.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
See, D.C.
That's
and
good.
I were in competition all the time. D.C., McGarrity,
right.
Thomas McGarrity out of Chicago. And,
mm-hmm.
of course, we all looked up to William T. Patrick, Jr. because he was the captain of our class. He became the first black councilman, I think, in Detroit.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Ms. Kim is also this back, y'all. Ms. Kim Weston is with us. Ms. Kim?
Yes, to God be the glory. They tried to keep me out, but I shift. And you all, hey, you right on. Thank you so much. You know what? I invited Brother Billy because he told me a story that I would like for him to share. As being a young man that just got into service itself, and he received a letter from his 12-year-old brother. Billy, do you mind sharing that story?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I'm the oldest son of William T. Fauntroy Sr. and Ethel Vine Fauntroy. And I was in the service 19 years old by the time I got into training as a night pilot. But my brother Walter was 12 years old, and he wrote me a letter. As I said, I had four brothers under me watching what I was doing. And he wrote me this letter, said, "When I grow up, I want to be just like you, scared the living daylights out of me." I had no idea that my brothers were watching me. Because of the war, I quit high school at 16 and went to work in the government. And I didn't want them to follow that. I did that because my father had seven children, two his parents, and my mother's mother to take care of. So I, as the oldest son, decided that I was going to quit high school and go to work, and I did. I got a job in the United States government, $1,200 a year.
Wow. Well, back then that had to be good money, wasn't it, brother Billy? Wasn't that good money back then?
This was 1942.
Yeah, so that was decent money back then, right?
Yeah, you can buy an automobile for $600.
Well, I went into service to fly. My mother signed for me, and I think she signed for me because she didn't think I could pass the test. apparently, I fooled her, and I fooled the United States Army Air Corps because I passed the test, and May of 1944, when I was 18 years old, I was put in the Army, sent to Keesler Field for basic training, took some more tests, and to my surprise, I passed those tests and was sent up to Tuskegee Army Airfield to learn how to be a single-engine pilot. I soloed in 1945. I could fly an airplane, couldn't drive a car.
Wow.
Well,
did you later learn how to drive a car?
What's that?
Yeah. Did you later learn how to drive a car?
Oh, yes. I became the chauffeur for my wife.
Okay.
We all
that's
do that.
Good. That's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a joke that we had. My wife, I met her, I was in college at Howard University after I graduated, after I was discharged from the Army. And I met her, and for a year I courted her from 46 to 47. And finally I said, look, will you marry me? And she said, no. Not until you get a job. I quit college and went to work. And in 1949, we were married. And she passed in 2011. So we had 61 years, 11 months, and 15 days together.
Oh, wow. That's
super.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
yes,
it,
that's
was.
Wonderful.
It was. We had a wonderful time together. In fact, we were in Atlantic City walking down the street and together. See, my wife didn't know me while I was in the service. We're walking down Kentucky Avenue back there, was where all the black entertainment was. And we're walking down the street and somebody yelled, William T. And I yelled back, William T, because I knew who it was. It was Bill Patrick, was in Atlantic City. And I guess he saw my bow legs and knew it was me. Oh, Bill.
Oh, well. Oh, my.
Well, the reason
like
I brought...
Yeah, I met Colonel Jefferson at the Kennedy Center when they had the program about the new National Black Museum. I don't know if he remembers me because I remember him. See, I was a kid in the service. I was 18, 19 years old. And most of those guys were men. And indeed, one of my classmates even had a son while he was there, William Walter Robinson, and he just passed in November. But they always took care of their little they called me Wee Billy Fauntroy because I was so small. And at the celebration for the museum, I was in a wheelchair. But all the other guys, I was the little fellow in the wheelchair that on the stage when the people were crying because they introduced us to Tuskegee Airmen.
Yeah.
God has blessed me, as I said. God has blessed me to be associated with people like Jefferson, Gerald McGee. Those men did so much for us. As I say us, I'm talking about the United States of America.
Yes.
All of us.
They have. They, as Chappie James would say, they opened the doors for us to walk through.
Absolutely.
And I have to say that I knew there were four generals that come out of Tuskegee, and I knew every one of them. I used to work for Chappie James when he was commander of NORAD, and I was in a fighter interceptor group, so he was my ultimate boss. I knew General Theus for 30 years, 40 years, I knew General Davis when he came to Detroit. I met him probably four times. Charles McGee, when he was a colonel, we had him in Detroit for when the Tuskegee Airmen got the Congressional Gold Medal. So.
Right.
He was the guest speaker here. And,
General McGee is 101 years old?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
Sure is.
That's wonderful.
And
he's a man that all of us are so proud of. I'm honored that he is my friend. Chappie James, I met at a party in Cape Cod. This was after the service. He was very active here in D.C. He and Billy, he was always at Billy Simpson's restaurant, and if you went there, you could see Chappie.
Mm-hmm. He was quite a guy, and I liked him. He was my ultimate boss. He was Commander NORAD, he was super.
You know, we've
he
talked
was the
about,
only big guy
about the military.
He was the only big guy in the Tuskegee Airmen that I know of. All the rest of them were like Jeff, kind of short, and all of them. None of them were above 6 feet. Let me put it that way, except Jeffy James, that I know of.
Yeah, well, my class,
and one other,
we had a couple of guys that were. In fact, one of my roommate was 6'4". I'm 5'4".
Wow.
And
wow.
I barely made it in. And he barely made it in also. I made it in from the short part. He made it in from the tall part. 6'4" was the maximum, and 5'4" was the minimum.
No.
Okay. And the only other guy was General Davis. He was tall too. They opened a lot of doors. I would not have been the first black base commander at Selfridge Field if it wasn't for the Tuskegee Airmen. I mean, everybody does their bit. And, if they hadn't done what they did, I would not have made it. And of course, once you get the door open, then other people would come through if you do it right. Some of the guys, I got mine, and they can get theirs the best way they can. That's the wrong way to do it.
Well, that was one of the things about the Tuskegee Airmen that I said. They all were. They helped everybody. Everybody helped everybody, wherever they could. And we haven't mentioned the civilian who taught us to fly. Chief Anderson the man that took Mrs. Roosevelt up, and she said, "Oh, you colored people can fly because of Chief Anderson." And there were several other Fox and. In fact, I read a letter today from one of them who was the I had breakfast with him both times that Obama was inaugurated. Doggone it, and I can't remember his name. But they Fox was one of them. And of course, Chief Anderson gave me my first check ride, which was a test to see if I learned from Cecil Ryan, who was my instructor, how to fly that airplane that we learned in the PT Stearman. And that airplane is in the museum, down in the basement of the museum in Washington, D.C.
Oh, super.
Oh, yeah.
So you didn't bend it up too bad, huh?
Yeah. I cry when I see it, very frankly, because it brings back very pleasant memories of people who, we always talk about the crab in the barrel. That had nothing to do with the Tuskegee experience, because we helped each other wherever we could. And, of course, I needed more help than most, because I hadn't even graduated from high school. And these guys had 2 years of college. So I'm very proud that God gave me an opportunity to be like with people like that. And I've tried in my life to help anybody that needs help.
Right.
For
and
whatever
that's what we
reason.
Need to do.
Right.
Because, it's a stepladder. And as long as we keep... If we get up to 6 feet, we can get the next guy up to 6'5", and the next guy up to 7 foot, and just keep climbing the ladder. And it isn't done by one guy. You know,
right.
It's one guy opening the door for another.
Yeah.
That's the way it's done.
I often say to the young people, you don't listen to people who said, I picked myself up by my bootstraps. Who gave them the boots?
Yeah, not only that,
yeah.
that's the first lie.
Right.
You know,
somebody's got to give you the boots so you can pull them up and do what you can for yourself
right.
and your community.
Absolutely. And that's a good metaphor. I hate it when I hear somebody say that because, again, that's the first lie.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't do it by yourself. There's
no.
always somebody that says, hey, dummy, do it
somebody
this way.
Somebody helps you.
Yep.
Somebody helps
yeah.
you. You know,
yeah.
I don't know if you know, but I know Kim knows. My brother, Walter, was the first congressman for the District of Columbia. And he's helped so many people in his lifetime that it bothers me that he is now not capable to do the things that he has done because of his age, and of course he's
sure.
younger than I am, but he's done so much for the world, not just the District of
yes.
Columbia, but for the world. And Kim knows
yes,
what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what we have to do. And
right.
and when we get to the point where we can't do it anymore, we pass the torch on, give it to younger hands, just like the Olympics, and I call them the kids, and the kids will carry it. Now I'm not
right.
as old as some of you guys. In fact, they call me the kid. I'm 85, and they call me the kid.
Welcome to the club.
So,
I'm one of the kids. 95 years old.
Right. And you know, Jeff is going to be 100 this year.
Wow.
Colonel Jefferson. So he sent out an invitation to hold the date card for us for his birthday party this year. It's in November, so I'll be there.
Hello, Kim?
That's Kim.
I want to hear Kim say something.
Yeah, I just heard her. Miss Kim?
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you barely, though. Can you talk up a little bit?
I don't know what to tell you.
Okay, we got you. You're clear.
Carter.
We got you.
Well, Kim, I haven't met you personally. I haven't looked in your face, but... I just want you to know that God bless me to have association with you. And I thank my brother Raymond for introducing me to you because we have a lot to talk about. And
yeah,
thank you for being a friend.
Oh, thank you so much for coming. You know, I wanted you to tell that story about you met Meta, a girl. How you... That time, that's yourself. And then they're telling you that they're looking up to you. But what you didn't tell them is who that. What you
can't. We can't hear you, Miss Kim.
Oh, shut up. Every time I get ready to say that. Can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am. We can hear you.
Tell them who the 12-year-old boy was. Can you all hear me?
Yes,
yeah.
ma'am. We can
Hello.
Hear you.
Yeah.
Who was
we can
the
hear
12?
You, Miss Kim. Brother Billy, she asked, who was the 12-year-old brother?
Huh?
She asked, who was the 12-year-old brother that you're referring to?
Walter. My brother Walter. He's next to me.
Oh,
he's 7 years younger
Frank.
Than me.
Oh,
Walter
I thought it was Brother Frank. Okay.
That's what
you're
talking about. Congressman Walter Fauntleroy that has
right.
helped the world. Okay?
First black first congressman for the District of Columbia.
Yeah.
and some of the stories that he tells about his association with Dr. King, Martin Luther King, is just amazing. And my brother Raymond, who's in Florida, had to, Walter called him up one day and asked him to come pick up Dr. King and take him to Dulles Airport. And Walter Raymond picked him up with a Mustang, and they were on the highway halfway to Dulles. And Dr. King said to Raymond, Raymond, what would you like to read in the paper in the morning? That Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was late for his airplane, or the late Dr. Martin Luther King, because Raymond was doing 100 miles an hour in that car. But Dr. King had a fantastic sense of humor.
Oh,
well. That was one of the things. But Raymond always tells us, yeah, he told me a nice way to slow down. Because he and my brother had reputation of being late for catching airplanes. They felt that airplanes had to wait for them.
All right. Oh, that's good.
I want to say one
We have another caller, y'all, with their hands up. It's been up for a while. Forgive me. Area code 313. Area code 313. Area code 313.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay. Hello.
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, could you tell me who we're speaking with?
Oh, this is Colonel Melvin. If that's the one you wanted from 313.
Yes, well, hello, Colonel Melvin.
You,
is there another 313?
Yeah, Miss Kim is on the line. Miss Kim Weston, she just spoke to you.
Oh, okay.
He probably didn't hear me, but thank you so much for joining the show, would you? And I don't know if, could you hear Raymond? I mean, Billy Fontroy, who's our daughter, that's on the line now?
I could, he was talking about his brother and Dr. King getting to the airport. We're not getting to the airport.
Yes.
So, Colonel, tell us a little something about, like we've been doing, would you?
Something about what I've been doing?
Yes, sir.
Since I retired, I have been working, and actually before I retired, been working with a high school in Detroit called Davis Aerospace Technical High School. And it's an interesting story there in the sense that the Davis Aerospace Technical High School is named after General B.O. Davis. And it is located at what we call Detroit City Airport. The name has been changed to the Coleman A. Young International Airport. And Coleman A. Young, as you know, was a Tuskegee Airman and the first black mayor of Detroit.
And a Tuskegee Airman.
That is correct. And, of course, General Davis was a Tuskegee Airman also. And he's been to Detroit. So the school located on the airport is a major thing. It is the only high school, or it was the only high school in the country that specialized in aviation maintenance, and it was located on an active airport. We had an emergency manager that didn't know how to spell airplane that decided that he was going to move the school from the airport to a another school located 5 miles from the airport that specialized in cooking. So, you know, you can almost see where that's going.
Yeah.
And the joke was maybe they're planning to bring back in-flight meals. Well, that didn't happen either.
Okay.
But I've been fighting for the last 8 years to get it back to Detroit City Airport or the Coleman A. Young Airport. And it appears as though we're getting to be going to be successful in that, in that the claim is that they're going to start, they've already started a couple of classes at the airport. We had an anonymous donor that donated $1 million to us to fix up a building so that they could use the school could use it. And now they're looking at building some more area for the school so that we can actually move the entire school back. So it's been a long struggle, like I say, 8 years, and it looks like we may be getting back to some sense of normalcy. Although we have, like everything else, nothing is perfect. We've got some folks in there that don't think that black folks, black kids, in fact, can learn aviation. And that's a fight that we're fighting. You know, as I tell them, this is not anything new. I graduated from Aero Mechanics, which is now Davis Aerospace High School. I was the first African American to graduate from there. And so we know it can be done, and there's a whole bunch after me.
Yes.
So, again, you know, you open the door, and mm-hmm. I'll tell you a quick story. I had an instructor that said he was going to make it very difficult for me to graduate from that school. And, of course, at 16, I said, you know, bring it on. I'm the only black guy in the school. And he did, and everything I did was wrong. Everything I did was wrong. And I said, you know, I don't need this stuff because the school was run by the FAA, the Board of Education, the state of Michigan. One of the problems was, one, the school was all white. Two, the school had no girls. It was all boys. Three, everybody got out in June. We at Aero Mechanics got out in July, so we had an extra month to go to school in summertime.
Oh.
And I think I mentioned that there was no girls.
Yeah.
Because all my buddies were going to a regular high school, and they had proms and dances and all the rest of that stuff. The only thing we could do is dance with an airplane, which was good, but it wasn't the same. So... The bottom line is, this instructor, and I didn't catch on to this until somewhat later, was teaching me that good enough is not good enough. That's why everything was wrong. He wanted perfection. That's number one. Number two, I said, he was giving me a hard time, and I said, you know, I don't need this stuff. I can go to Pershing High School, and it has sports, it has football, track, girls, and all the rest of that stuff.
Yeah.
But I read an article. This was in 1952. I read an article in Reader's Digest about the Tuskegee Airmen, in particular how they gave General Davis a silent treatment while he was in West Point. And I said, you know, if he could put up with that, I can put up with this. That's what got me through that school, because I was ready to walk until I read that article.
Oh, I'm glad you didn't. We're glad
and
that
so,
you didn't walk.
And I told General Davis that story, and I said, you know, you never know who you're touching and when.
Right.
Yeah.
And I said, you saved me at that point. We didn't know each other, but you saved me at that point. And hopefully I'm doing the same for somebody else.
somebody else.
Yes, we all help each other. Leave no one behind. So that's a quick synopsis of what I'm doing now. I used to work in research and development for Burroughs Corporation. They built computers and that kind of stuff. But old folks may know about Burroughs. The young kids don't. It was like there were three big computer manufacturers, IBM, Burroughs, and National Cash Register. So I worked for them for several years, and I have a couple of patents, computer patents, from there, and I was pretty well known in the scientific community for electronics. So and then when I went into the military, I went in as what they call an avionics officer. That's aviation electronics, and that's the radar systems and the missile systems and electronic warfare kind of stuff on the airplane. So I was doing that. Then I was a squadron commander. Then I was a group commander. And then I was a base commander. And then they kicked me out because I was too old. So, yeah, after 60, you don't. They pretty much get you out of the military unless you're a general or an admiral or something like that. So that's pretty much it. But I'll answer any questions you might have that anything pertaining to aviation or electronics or avionics, I'm pretty good at. And educating black youth. I am a fire-breathing dragon on that, and I do not compromise. We can do it. I don't want to hear nothing about it can't be done. Say again?
I'm sorry. Forgive me for cutting across you. We have David Stone on the line also, and he works with black fathers and, you know, with black sons, so I'm sure that he'll be very interested in your program, and he can also share his program with you as well.
Oh, yeah. David and I know each other, he started out in helping Davis Aerospace. Yeah, so we're good.
Oh, great. Well, we have Brother David with us.
Mm-hmm.
Brother David?
Yeah, I heard it.
Yeah. Yes, I would like just to say that Colonel Milburn is a national and international superstar. He is a national treasure. He's a treasure trove of information in terms of the history of aviation and making sure that the youth are informed of the opportunities in all areas of aviation. He's president of the Davis Aerospace Advisory Board, and he's had a major impact on that school. I graduated myself from Aero Mechanics, which later turned to Davis Aerospace in 1968 or 67. And I wanted to be a pilot. I learned at the Detroit City Airport with Wayne State Flying Club. Then I went out to San Bernardino Valley College, got an associate degree in flight operations, and that was a very rich experience. But I'm working now with an organization that we're forming called True Fathers, trying to serve as a bridge, as a liaison between fathers who have left the home for whatever reason, and as well as prisoners, men who have no relationship with their children, and trying to establish a bond that they could return to. Because, you know, our children are hurting emotionally from the absence of the male energy in the home, the direction. And so I feel that though we have so many negative factors impacting the nuclear family, that if we can come together, that the various organizations form tight coalitions with one another, that each organization specializes in something that can benefit the child, so there will be less duplication, and we can channel our energies into getting the family back together in some shape or form in the beginning, so the children will not suffer emotionally filled with anger the way they are and release this anger onto the greater society. And if we do this, we will uplift our children as students who will have better self-esteem, more confidence, and understand the basic concepts of conflict resolution within their family. And what I've been pushing for young people to do is to ask their parents if they can have a weekly family meeting. So if there's any conflict or dissension between the brothers and sisters or anyone else in the family, that they can be resolved so that we can establish a family that is strong from within and powerful within and from without, so that we can improve our block club, our block, and our greater community and our city. This is what's needed all across America. And if we do that, we will ensure our own survival, because this is a time when America is, some factions of America are working very hard, staying up night and day to figure out how they're going to disenfranchise our vote through voter suppression. Therefore, we have to take this issue and our survival at this time very seriously, because the life we save, the family we save, may be our own.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that
and we have to be very, very focused, because right now, in my opinion, we are at a crossroads very similar to prior to the Civil War. We're trying to figure out whether we're going to be a union or not, and or not is big. January 6th should have been a wake-up call for everybody in the world. This is serious business. Voting is serious business. And if, you know, if I had a big enough baseball bat, anybody that said they weren't going to vote, I'd crown them one. Because, you know, I hear people complaining, and the first thing I say, you know, did you vote? You know, no, it doesn't count. Well, that's what you keep on doing what you're doing, you're going to keep on getting what you got. And what you got is nothing right now. So we got to get up off our fanny, make sure that not only we vote, but everybody in our family votes, and all of our friends vote, and all of their friends vote. It is critical. And, you know, we are going to need some help from the White House and other places. But, you know, we got to put the boots on and pull ourselves up, as the gentleman said. We have the boots. Now the question is, can we keep them? And all these things that you're seeing right now, and I gave a speech on this the other day. In fact, I gave a couple of speeches on it. Everything that you're seeing right now is for one reason, and that one reason is to keep those people who are fearful in power, and because they are scared to death that in 20 years, when they are the minority, that we will not treat them, or we will treat them like they've been treating us.
They treat
it that way. And not necessarily the case, but the old saying, elections have consequences. We have to make sure that we do what we need to do. And it's critical that we vote. And that's a non-paid political announcement, and I quit.
Well, what about the saying that we really do not select the president? The president is selected for us.
Well,
they're already selected before we even go out and vote. They've already made up their mind who was going to be the president. That everything is just a charade.
Well, if you look at the laws that they're doing right now, what you're saying is correct.
Yes.
Your vote won't count at all. That's why I said we're going to need some help out of Washington. But I can guarantee you this. If you don't vote, your vote definitely won't count. So, you know, you're between a rock and a hard place. if you do vote and they decide not to count it, at least you got it in there. But if you don't vote, it's guaranteed not to count. My buddy had an example one day. He said, you know, we were playing golf, and I'm not a golfer, but we were playing golf. He said, you know, if you hit the ball, you got a 50-50 chance of putting it in the hole. But if you don't hit it hard enough, you've got a 100% chance of it not going in the hole. We got to hit it hard enough. You know, then we got a 50-50 chance. But if you don't vote, it's guaranteed not to succeed. So, you know, we need to take care of exactly what you said. The voting is a problem because it's not the normal type of voting. It's I'm losing the word right now. That's what happens when you get CRS and you get old folks. Mine is a terrible thing to lose. But if we go to counting the votes and just the votes, then we will succeed. And the reason is that every vote will count. Right now, that's not the case because the states can make their own rules up about how they're going to count them. So,
yeah, and the electoral is the one who really decides to vote. You know, it's not based on the popular vote. It's based on the electoral.
Right, the electoral votes. That's what I was trying to think of. So, yeah, so it's the electoral votes. You got to get the popular vote. That's where I say we need some help from the Congress to go and get the electoral vote, the popular vote, and then we have a fighting chance. But right now with the electoral votes and the states changing the rules under which they can do that, you know, this is a giant leap, and that's why I say our democracy is, in fact, under attack, and we have to wake up and see it. You know, this is not business as usual. We have to actually pay attention to what's going on. There was a thing, famous thing that they were saying at one time. First they came for the communists, and I didn't worry because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the union people, and I didn't worry because I wasn't a union. And then they came for the Jews, and I didn't worry because I wasn't a Jew. And then they came for me, and there was nobody left. We can't sit back and let things happen and say, wait, because the last person there can't fight. So we have to start now.
That they have coming against us, you know, with the what they're spraying us with, what they're feeding us, you know, and then, you know, with these vaccines and everything else, they're dumbing down the country, and they've been doing that for the longest time with the fluoride and everything else. So are people really making a informed decision where whatever comes across the media and everything else, you don't know if they're telling you the lie? You know, they're spreading a lot of propaganda.
Right. And guess who's doing that?
Who's doing it?
Amongst other people. The Russians are doing a whole bunch of it.
Yes.
And we're buying into it. But as you said, we have to be informed, which means we have to read. And we have to use common sense. I was in the doctor's office some time ago, and several months ago, let me put it that way. And we were talking about the shots that everybody's getting. And I said, well, you know, he said something to the effect that a lot of African Americans weren't getting the shots. And I said,
yeah.
Can you blame them? And he said, yeah, he said, you know, it's safe, it's on, and, you know, went on his spiel. And I said, but, yeah, we have a history. And I said, I'm a Tuskegee Airman. and he misunderstood what I said. I did say I was a Tuskegee Airman, but he was into the Tuskegee Airmen, not Tuskegee Airmen, the Tuskegee experiment. And I said, we have a history of not being treated well. The Indians have a history of not being treated well. So when people say, well, I'm not so sure, you know, like the Indians say, you got to walk a mile in those moccasins before you understand what we're talking about.
Right.
You know, they bought smallpox to the Indians, which had no defense for it, and other diseases that the Indians had no defense for. And then we come into the Tuskegee experiment, and they knew what they were doing, wouldn't tell us. We were the guinea pigs. So there's a lot of that stuff going on, and you have to read and use common sense and make an as informed a decision as you can. And again, everything's not going to be black and white. You're going to have to look at the facts, make your best decision, and live with it or die with it.
Yes, that is true. I agree. I mean, because my whole thing is look up what's in the ingredient, you know, see what's in the ingredient, and, you know, which a lot of them, they're not even putting on the leaflets anymore, exactly what is in the ingredients that is in the vaccine, from what I understand. And, you know, so a lot of it is blind faith.
Mm-hmm.
You know, blind faith that they're not doing a genocide against black people, black and poor people.
Mm-hmm. And as what you're saying, not knowing what's in it is a big factor. Although for me, even if they did print it, I probably wouldn't know what it was, unless it said poison or something like that. I wouldn't know. But and I'm pretty good in science, but that kind of chemistry is not. I don't know if it's not salt or pepper. I don't know what it is. So that's
why I said research the ingredients. You know, if you research the ingredients, then, you know, you're more apt to know. And then, you know, also the side effects, you know, and everything else of what each ingredient is, so that you can determine if this is going to be the best thing for my body. You know, putting this foreign object in my body, what is it going to do to my body?
And believe me, I have that same concern. I really, truly did. The next question, though, is if you know you're going to die without it and you might live with it, then that's, you know, those are the kind of considerations that you got to, you know, get to in your head and figure out whether that's good for me or bad for me. And then make whatever decision that you got to make. If, you know, it's like, you know, if there's machine gun fire going on all around you and you stand up, you know, you're probably going to get killed. So if you keep your head down and move to another spot, maybe you got a better chance. But if you stay where you're at, you know, things may not be good for you. So, but that's where, as you said, an informed decision comes. You take what you got, you make the best decision you can, and hopefully it's the right one.
Yeah. And that's all we can do is just, you know, I mean, to me, it's an individual choice. I'm not happy about them trying to mandate. You know, as far as individually, if you decide that this is what you want to do, then, you know, that's on you. If you decide that you don't want to do it, then that's still on you. But I think it should be an individual choice, not a forced choice that everyone has to do this.
Well, and so far that what you said is correct. They're not mandating it, and so we still have that option. And
they're talking about having the military. Well, excuse me, I was corrected earlier. The National Guard go door to door to try to enforce vaccines.
Well, I don't think that they're going to enforce it. I think if they go door to door, it'll just be if you want the shot, we got it for you. If you don't want it, you know, have a nice day. We'll see you later. I don't think. Of course, I don't know. I'm entering an area here where I don't know enough to speak intelligently. So I guess my best shot is to be quiet.
Yes, I understand. Trust me, I understand. Brother Eddie, did you have anything that you wanted to add on this? Brother Eddie? Brother Eddie is my co-host. He's staying quiet tonight, but this isn't his night to be on. He's usually on on Wednesday. So, yes, he's just laying back in the cut. If anybody has a question or a comment, if you press the number one, I can be happy to open up your line. Okay, well, I guess no one is ready to ask a question or to have a comment. So let me ask you about this. I asked the commander earlier. Today on the news, they were saying that they were going to have women, they're voting on having women as a part of the draft. What is your opinion on that?
Having the women on what again?
To have women being drafted, having to register for
drafted.
The draft.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think we talked about that earlier.
Okay. That was just you. Forgive me.
Yeah. Well, like I said, mine's a terrible thing to lose, right?
Yes. Yes, it is. Okay. Let me ask. Brother Billy, are you still with
us?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm still here.
What is your opinion on happening for the draft?
I have no opinion on the draft. Very frankly, but I would like to comment on what was said about the inoculation.
Okay, sure.
I remember as a child going to, before they let us go to school, they vaccinated each one of us.
Yeah.
We didn't have knowledge of what was in it, but we had faith that our government would not do something that would hurt us. And when I went in the military, that was one of the things that they'd line us up and give us shots. They didn't ask us whether
sure
we wanted them or not. They'd line us up and give us shots. And as a result, we did not have smallpox. One of the shots I remember was malaria, and it would hurt. In fact, when we got the shots, we would go out and play ball or something just to move around to get away from the hurt that resulted from it. Later, polio came up, and I had a sister who was in one of those big tanks. But because our government went to work and got inoculated us and took care of that, I have faith that what they're doing now is to help us take care of ourselves. I don't give a darn. I'd like to say it another way. I don't give a darn what the ingredients are. If the ingredients that are in there have prevented fewer than the 600,000 who have died from this foolishness, then give me a shot. And if I need another one, I've had my two. And if I need another one, I'm going to take it. I don't understand the opposition to having something that's going to save your life or your neighbor's life. And that's the thing that bothers me with what's going on. I am a Tuskegee Airman, had nothing to do with the Tuskegee experiment. We knew nothing about it. I am, I just don't understand. And I know each of us, and that's the thing, we each of us has our own opinion of what we should do. I think we should all take the shot so that it won't affect me or my neighbor. And that's my opinion.
I would like to add one other thing to that.
Yes.
And that is, how many people have got the polio shot, or the polio sugar cube?
Mm-hmm.
The first one was a shot. The second was a sugar cube.
Cube.
And
right.
I had both of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, the you know, would you rather spend your life in that iron lung, or would you rather take the sugar cube? And the same thing is true with the shots that we're talking about now. The thing I think that you have a numbers guy there, that the statistics are these. Over 600,000 Americans have died.
Absolutely.
That is more lives lost than we lost in World War I, World War II, and Korea. So, and we were trying to kill people then. But now we got this shot that had we done this earlier, masked up earlier and all the rest of that stuff, maybe we'd only be at 100,000. I mean, which is
right.
Still too many. But the question is, if, again, the golf thing, you got to hit the ball hard enough. And if you know that this virus is going to kill you, now you have to make a decision whether you want to get the shot and worry about whether they put
what's
a magnet in there or not or something, or which I think is, by the way, let me go on the record. That is the most stupid thing I have seen.
Isn't it?
The girl coming up, putting that spoon up to her neck and saying, hell, we used to do that and play a game with it when I was a kid. Put a spoon on your forehead or on your nose and see how long you can keep it there. That's old stuff. I don't. So putting the spoon on your nose and say, well, the shot caused that is BS. I have another one for that.
Well, that is my magnets that are in it. That is magnetized.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's not true. I can do that whether you got the shot or not.
Absolutely.
And let's assume that there was a magnet in it. Let's assume that there was. What are you going to do with it? What are they going to do with that magnetized shot that they just gave you? Nothing. I mean, it's that part is crazy. And let me rephrase that. That's not crazy. That's just plain stupid.
Our president saying Clorox would help.
Yeah.
You took Clorox.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I said that I didn't know much about chemistry. I'll face
me?
Up to that.
I'm a civil engineer.
Know,
I feel the same way you do.
But I do know about electronics and magnetism and electromagnetism and that kind of stuff. And that, I say, is stupid. Now,
yeah,
I claimed I didn't know about the other stuff, but I do know about the others.
We have a person with their hand up, so I'm sure they have a question or a comment for you.
Sure.
Eric 0706.
Good evening, Sister Antoinette. I've been I've been attempting to stay on this conversation, but I keep, everything's in divine order, and a couple of people have called my mom for one, and I had a nice long talk with her as the moon was rising. But the brother was speaking about an earlier, I know they were talking about the whole thing with manhood, climbing the ladder and 6 feet up and then 6 feet five, and how we're to help each other up and pulling ourselves up by the bootstrap, and then I had to get off, and then I come back, and now we're talking about a spoon being balanced on the nose, and I said, man, this is a deep conversation they have here. They didn't get up to the top of the ladder, and they seen all these people balance the spoons on their nose.
We were
good.
Talking about the vaccine, the magnets in the vaccine that, you know, people, you know, say that they're able to balance the spoon and everything on them, the metal.
Yeah, but that's just a distraction because you're really overstanding what the microscopic or the what really they're attacking is at the gene level now. They've already got us at the cellular level because that's the food that we've been eating. So they got that,
yeah.
And now with the nanotechnology and the particles that's already in, they've just been able to put in. And see, people don't understand something. Your blood, if your iron is low, you're anemic. So that means is that your body, if you put a magnet, you should be able to have enough iron in your body that you could draw a magnet to you. Because like the brother was saying, we are energy. And what we have to understand is we're drawing frequencies. And the different frequencies that now have inundated the environment they're creating is causing distortion of the body to be reactive. You check the history that from the Spanish influenza that happened in 1918 or 1917 is when the creation of electricity. Then came radar. Then came the next electronic. And each time that you did, you seen another transformation in the human body that reacted to the electromagnetic fields that they were having to live in. So what you're seeing is that this energy that man has created, this artificial energy that's being created, is distorting the human body because we have a frequency that we respond to 432 hertz, which is in nature. We respond to 7.83, which is the Schumann frequency, which is in the soil of the earth, which is a living being. And we respond to each planet has a frequency in its solar system, in our solar system. Even the moon is right now wobbling, and they're looking at the moon moves the tide, and your body is 70% water. So if the moon is full, why do they call, you know, put more police on duty and more people in the emergency room is because what? They know the human mind is going to be affected by the magnetic pull of the moon. And so we must understand that they're creating this. And even when you look at, you know, everybody look at Amazon is burning and they're doing what they're doing. You've messed with the carbon balance because now you've made it to where the only place that really is now the lungs of the earth is Gabon, Africa. And Ghana's just replanted a million trees and Ethiopia just planted a million trees. We've got to have that balance of the exchange of our carbon with the tree. Because the tree is life, and the frequencies in which we're burning down and tearing down, and then the waters that we're finding, because we're looking at how the Arctic and the Antarctic is melting, and it's releasing that million years of memory and consciousness that's in that ice is turning to water that's coming and inundating the planet, which we need to bring some purity back to this earth. But what we're seeing also is what they just found in Tibet, and they, a 15,000-year glacier. They just found, I think, about 30 viruses that's in this ice.
viruses that can attack the human body that they're pulling out of ice that's getting ready to melt. We're causing ourselves our own demise because man is not following the universal laws, the cosmic laws, and the natural laws. We're out of balance and we're out of order. And what we're seeing is looking at what, like the brother was saying, you know, we got to get the boots, but why do we need, if we put our bare feet back onto the earth, because most of the boots they make nowadays are not leather, they're artificial, and they're insulators to keep you from really connecting to the electromagnetic frequency of the earth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know what part I to fit in, but, you know, we're on point because it's a full moon, and it's also what's called the galactic year or the solar year, because now Sirius, this moon will, and the star Sirius will shine in the Queen's Chamber in Egypt in the pyramid Giza, and this is how it's aligned on this day. It's called the day out of time, that it will shine in there and reflect through the Queen's Chambers back down to the reflection pool under the Giza pyramid, and that energy will make the Nile River will rise, and the process of growing their food and being able to use the land and water is the order of what nature has done for those people to understand.
Well, like I say, there's a lot going on, and we have to pay particular attention to it. And there's a lot of scientific stuff going on, so we got to read. Got to read.
Yeah, but I see that's very important in the science. But where science leaves off, spirituality is eternal. If we get back to the spiritual, because what the understanding of the spiritual is what gave birth to science, because man is trying to understand himself and his connection to the creative force that did all of this. This is why we're attacking, not at the cellular level, but the gene, because this is the genetic footprint. The DNA is the human coding that man is trying to decipher to make himself be his own creator. And you can't have a body that's been created by someone and thinking that you're going to be able to duplicate what the creator did in making the universe, the cosmos, and all the stars, planets, and everything that's out there. It's done by someone other than man.
Yeah. Ms. Kim? I thought Ms. Kim was saying something.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
can you hear me, Ms. Kim? I'm sorry. I didn't know you were on the line.
They've been cutting me off. I have been off four times. I didn't even know
I was
doing.
Yes, ma'am. You're back on.
Okay. That's what I wanted to say. But finally, everybody, I mean, you all just have no idea how this makes me feel, because the things that have been expressed today, even though I'm going to tell you all about my point on the vaccine, I saw some doctors that said that artificial stuff that they're putting in there ain't cool. I ain't going to go into it right now, so I'm just waiting to see what's happening. So if any of y'all fall, just had it, I know I don't want it. But y'all keep hanging in there, you're not the one. Did y'all hear that?
Yes, ma'am, we heard
you. Did you all hear that? Huh?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Because they say that they have put in that vaccine, they say that it's overtaking the immune system. But if you got a strong one and you believe in God, see, like that, that's where the win is right there.
Yes. And well, Ms. Kim, we are almost out of time, so let me afford you the last of this time for you to tell us about your day, your Kim Weston day last week.
Well, actually what's happening right now is what I want.
Yes.
I wanted to honor our veterans and especially our daughters. Okay.
Yeah.
Because everything, what you all were saying, that's my belief, that the beginning of black people in America starting to have respect for themselves and demanding respect from others. The first thing I really see is the 50, I guess, in the book. And so between that and my little red-tailed airplane, for those of you that have never heard my little story, my aunt that was a whack brought me back a little wooden airplane when I was about 4 or 5 years old, and it had a red tail painted on it. So I feel that indoctrinated me with the Tuskegee Airmen. And then I was founded by Major Tillman and some of the brothers to be an honorary Tuskegee Airman. So to God be the glory. That's what's important to them. I'll be good. All right. And incidentally, I do want to say, in Western days, July 1976 was designated by Mayor Coleman E. Young. And even though it's 100 years later, at Coleman A. Young International Airport, I think it's fantastic. And it was in June. Hopefully,
Miss Kim, you keep going in and out.
Nothing I can do. I'm big overrun. My phone. God bless everybody. I love you. Thank you so much.
God bless you, Kim.
Good night.
Good night.
Are you leaving us?
Yeah, I'm still here, but I am going to have to leave. I'm seeing a whole bunch of TV just came back on, seeing a whole bunch of damage here. So I'm going to have to go check the basement and make sure that it isn't flooded.
Yes, well, you can stay. Thank you for joining us tonight. We truly appreciate you. And thank you for your service that you have done for us. So thank you so much.
Okay, well, thanks for having me. Really appreciated it. And thanks for all your people that are contributing to your program. So that's good.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I'm gonna...
This is Bill Fauntroy calling to thank him for inviting me. We have a fantastic relationship. We only know each other by telephone, but it's a very positive relationship. Thank you for having me.
Billy,
and,
before you go, can you hear me?
To what?
Birthday and the parade. Would you tell them that before we go?
No, they had a parade for me back on March the 28th. My birthday is the 26th. But they had a parade, and over 100 cars were in it. We celebrate, and I'm hoping that Michigan does this, the fourth Thursday of every March from now on is Tuskegee Airmen Commemorative Day.
That's great.
And that's in the District of Columbia and Virginia. There are other states that have done it, and I'm hoping that Michigan decides to do it.
Okay, that's the fourth
Thursday.
Say that again. The fourth Thursday
of March is Tuskegee Airmen Commemorative Day. And that's because so much went on with the Tuskegee Airmen in March.
Okay. I'll try and see what we can do about that.
Yeah, well, as I said, Virginia and the District of Columbia have proclamations that have been made by the city council in the District of Columbia and in Virginia. Mm-hmm. Maryland is still working on it. But every fourth Thursday, they make it Tuskegee Airmen Commemorative Day each year since we've been trying to do it. But now, the District of Columbia and Virginia, forever, the fourth Thursday is Commemorative Day for Tuskegee Airmen.
I'll work on that and see what we can do.
Right.
Yeah.
And if I don't, I hope somebody can look up Bill Patrick and D.C. Thomas and let them know that Little Billy is still around.
We'll definitely do that for you. We will do that for you.
Okay. Good night.
Okay. Have a good one.
Good night. Thanks for joining
Bye,
us, Brother Bill.
Good night.
Good night. Okay. Ms. Kim and Brother David?
Yes,
y'all
can
with
you hear
us
me?
Still? Yes,
you
we
hear
can.
Me, Antoinette?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we can hear you.
I thought this was
Tommy.
Great. Yes, I invited.
I did too. Thank you.
I wanted the Colonel to experience you, Antoinette, and to be a part of this, but I didn't know he was going to be. I should have known he was going to be fantastic. He always is great.
Yes, he was very great. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I'm glad that he was able to join us.
Yes, because he's done so much in terms of getting students interested in aviation and spreading the word about Davis Aerospace so that they can experience aviation and learn how to fly and work on planes as aircraft technicians.
Oh. Then that's good. That's really good.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. See, and if I could get my grandchildren out there, I don't know. I'm not going to lie. I don't know. So I'm apprehensive about them going up in the air.
Yeah, well, you know, black folks have been afraid of the water and afraid of the air because we have so many issues of survival. We're very focused on how am I going to make it today, how am I going to make it the next day, all the police brutality, all of the bills we have to pay, the water, paying all the water bills and electric bills. We've got a lot on our plate. So when it comes to getting in the water or flying in an airplane, it seems risky to us because life feels risky to us. That makes us very insecure and apprehensive about our security. I mean, yes we have faith in God in the most abstract and practical level, but when we're talking about going into the air, we're not too sure about that because we think of what's under us, what's supporting us. And when we look down at those ceiling things, we get apprehensive and afraid.
Yeah.
I mean, many of us, not all
right.
of us, many of us, that, you know, many of us don't have that fear. But there are many parents who don't want their children to go on a small airplane because they're afraid the plane might crash. And this makes the child very apprehensive and afraid and insecure. So, therefore, we don't get the number of kids going to the high school like we might have if it was explained to them in the science classes how airplanes fly. That's what I do. I go to Detroit Public Schools and get in the science classes and explain how an airplane flies, the science of it, and tie it into spirituality to where they can feel from a physical and spiritual experience what that is about, and knowledge is power. And we're afraid
yes,
of things that we don't understand or know about.
Yes.
That generates fear. But the more we understand the world and the physics and science, then we have an understanding that we can get into a car, and if we know how a car operates and we're alert, that we're not afraid of the car crashing. But there's so much that we don't, many people don't know about how an airplane flies, and they're afraid of the plane crashing. But actually, with the airlines, you have more of a chance of survival in an airplane trip than you do in a car. The stats bear that out.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But look, I didn't even want my children to, I was scared even when they were driving. I still don't want them driving in bad weather, but they do it anyway. But, you know, I'm still like, no, I don't want anything to happen to you. Don't go, you know, stay home.
But so
they don't
when it comes
to
an airplane, when it comes to for them getting on an airplane, your fear is even amplified even more than a car with an airplane. Am I
yes.
right about that? Yes.
Yes, you are. Look, I just want them to stay on the ground and be safe.
Because you're a mother and you're protective of your children.
Yes.
Right.
As I said, even though they're grown folks now, you know, with their own
yes.
children, but I'm still, you know, I'm still
yes,
mom. I'm always
normal.
On the mom.
That's understandable. That's understandable.
Just trying to now.
Yes.
Yeah, I was just trying to see was my mic still open because this is a good
yes, you're still
subject
open, Brother
what, Tom. When we have certain fears, and we were talking about the vaccine and
yes.
taking the vaccine, and it's really kind of everything is in divine order, and it's really it's the 89th anniversary. I think it was around the 25th or 26th of July, 1932, is when the Tuskegee syphilis experiment began. In this month, in 1932, that experiment began there in Mobile, somewhere right there in Alabama, but it was called the Tuskegee Experiment. And this is the part that we learned about this, and this is a part of what people looking at, especially our people, saying that they don't trust this experimentation. Because of those things that happened that ensued. And the other part is that they say that we fear water is because we came over on ships. But you find most people on the continent or most people in the Caribbean and that, they don't fear water. But we have to understand something once we achieve it, because in the Olympics, the last Olympics, the gold medal was won by a black woman that achieved that because they said that we couldn't swim, but look what we were able to do. And she was able to win a gold medal for the United States in the different events of swimming.
For the
Are we still there? Yeah, I'm here.
Yes, we're still here.
Oh, okay. But no, I was just sharing that because when we put, like Mother says, is that it's the way in which we give our children that ability to understand something about flying and swimming, because the best time to teach a child to swim is when it comes out of the womb. Because it
yeah.
still has memory of being in water, and it will adapt to water. The indigenous people took their child or had their children birthed in water, so they never got the fear. And so when we're able to do the teaching in the right way, like the brother said, in teaching them the dynamics of flying and what it consists of, then they will have a better understanding when you have knowledge of what you're ready to do. And that's the challenge, because the fear comes from lack of knowledge. once you overstand something, it no longer becomes a fear.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's true. But see, that's one of them things I look and see with my eyes. And just, I don't know. I guess being an overprotective mother.
Yeah. But that's the woman's, that's the woman, because she develops, the child develops in her. She has that connection,
yeah,
that a man could never have, that connection of we could be fathers and love our children, but we don't have that motherly connection, because every man has a belly, but we all came out of a woman.
Yes. Yes, that is true. So listen to your mothers. We know best. Does that work? Mothers know best.
Yeah, but nowadays you have to be skeptical, because motherhood is something that a girl has, is when a child is born, is when a girl has the thought. Because even in the womb, when that girl is developing, she's also receiving the eggs that she's going to come onto the earth to be able to produce another child.
Yeah.
It's in the way in which you teach that girl womanhood and motherhood that she becomes that. And there's a lot,
yeah,
of women out here that have brought forth children that was because of the moment, but didn't really know what they were getting ready to do and weren't ready to deal with. And a lot of them don't want to deal with.
True. That is so true. They just don't know the full responsibility of it.
Well, you know, when you open the gateway, you know that something can come back out. You put something in,
yes,
something can come back out.
Yes, that is true. That is so, so true.
Right.
I'm going to play a song that I meant to do last night, but I didn't have it. I didn't have it fully loaded, but it is loaded now. And this is Miss Kim's version of The Greatest Love.
down in our hearts, where nobody really, really understands where we're coming from. They say they do, but not really. But I want to tell you, sometimes it won't go like you want it to go. Oh, but if it leads you, if it leads you for long.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
And that's the perfect song to end our night with, Greatest Love. And you've shown us the greatest love over and over and over again. So many times you've shown us so much love. And we truly
Amen.
Appreciate that love.
Yes, indeed.
God be the glory.
Yes. God for you. And I thank God for all of y'all, and I thank you for being with us tonight. Don't forget Dry Bones tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern time for the Helios. And, Ms. Campbell, do you want to give us some closing remarks so we can close the show out?
Can you hear me?
Nope. Yeah. We can hear you.
God bless you. Thank you so much. I want to say, I want to check the dry bones. The Yodas were on.
Yes. We're grateful
and
for
we didn't mention the Indian Nation.
No, we didn't, Miss Kim. We'll do it next time. We didn't have time. Remember, we kept having difficulties.
I want to get them. Yes. They gave me a proclamation.
Okay. Tell us about
the Aboriginal people of North America gave me the proclamation. What a recognition.
We can hear you, Ms. Kim.
I bless you. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Okay, well, Ms. Kim, you'll tell us about it next time about the Indian Proclamation. Yes, ma'am.
We want to have the chief on because he also gave the Tuskegee Airmen a proclamation that they're supposed to put up in the museum. So,
Sounds good.
Yes, God is good. I love you. Better call me. I don't care if you do it for me.
I love you.
Yeah, that brother.
I love her more, and nothing she can do about it. That's right.
God bless y'all. Thank you, Dave.
Bye now. We love
Thank
you.
Thank you, Billy Parkboy, and who was on when I first got on? From
the commander was on.
Yeah, the commander. Was that Commander Chambers? Hello.
Oh, it may have been.
Huh?
Cedric
Chambers. Yeah,
Civil
I was asking, was that Commander Chambers that was on?
Yeah, I didn't hear him.
I don't
him.
Think so. I think he's older than Commander. Who was the first person that you were talking to after that?
He was the Commander. Brother David, you all knew each other.
Yes, Milburn. Colonel Milburn.
I'm not talking about Colonel Milburn. Colonel Milburn.
Well, it may have been, was Jefferson
Commander
there?
No,
or
no,
Chambers.
No.
Chambers
God
is the commander of the Civil Air Patrol.
Okay. God bless everybody. I thank you.
Yes.
And Lord willing, we'll be able to do it much better next year. But the one thing that we've got to remember the people that stepped out their first force. you know.
Yeah.
It was into this year, they were saying, because my thing is, I don't know, what did they fight for? Did they fight for this mess that's going on now? Is that what they wish they lied for? So we need to do another show, I think. God bless you all.
Yeah.
I'm going to win this time.
Hi, well, we thank
okay,
the airmen for joining us, and we thank you, Brother David, for being with us, and we thank the woman
thank
of the, we thank the lady behind it all. We thank Miss Kim Weston, and so with that, y'all, don't forget Drive On tomorrow morning at 10 a.m., and y'all have a nice night, and thank you for being
you
with us. Good night.
Brother Ray at 3.
Pardon me, Miss Kim?
I said Brother Ray at 3.
Oh,
Brother
yes, Miss Kim, forgive me. You're right. Don't forget to drum, y'all, at 3 o'clock Eastern time. Don't forget that drumming, no matter where you are in the world, at 3 o'clock Eastern time, don't forget to, that we're drumming. And we're drumming to lift every voice and for God to intervene into all of this madness that's going on in the world. Okay, y'all. Y'all have a good night. And we'll close out with Miss Kim.
Never.